Well, reality TV has become big business at the moment in the UK, and it seems that there isn't a week that goes by without a reality TV programme of some kind or another on either of the channels. So we have The Apprentice, that finishes, and then Big Brother starts. Big Brother finishes, and no doubt something like Celebrity Knitting Circle will begin. It seems like it's an endless cycle, but what makes reality TV so popular? Well, I think one of the biggest reasons is that we love to see what the different contestants think of one another. We love to see how they judge themselves, and even more, how they judge others. We love to see those bits where they talk directly to the camera about the other contestants. And don't the producers know it? They make sure that all reality TV shows have a sizable amount of the programme devoted to it. Would The Apprentice have been enjoyable if we'd not known what the other contestants thought of each other? Would Big Brother have become a worldwide phenomenon if it had not had the diary room? You see, we really enjoy these bits because we've made judgments about the contestants involved and we love to see if others feel the same. But this isn't just the case in reality TV. Judging others dominates real life. And as human beings, we're very quick to judge. We judge those we work with. We judge those we socialise with. We judge our own families. In fact, we judge just about everyone. Sometimes we do judge wrongly, but more often than not, we judge ourselves to have judged rightly. And it's funny, isn't it? But we even judge ourselves, albeit generally favourably. But what does Jesus say about judging others? What does Jesus teach us about how, as Christians, we need to act when it comes to forming judgments about other people and ourselves? Well, it'll be no surprise to you to hear me say that in today's passage, I think we have the answer to these questions. In this passage, Jesus gives us four very simple but clear, direct and interrelated instructions. Instructions primarily for his disciples as they live and work in an environment dominated by judgment, but lessons that we too can learn from as we also live and work in a world dominated by judgmental attitudes. So firstly, do not judge, verses 37 and 38. And here we see that Jesus' first instruction could not be clearer if you look down at verse 37. Do not judge, and you will not be judged. But what does Jesus mean when he says this? Well, judge can mean a number of different things. But thankfully for us, Jesus goes on to explain exactly what kind of judgment he is referring to in the rest of this verse, in verse 38. Can you see? Do not condemn, and you will not be condemned. Forgive, and you will be forgiven. Give, and it will be given to you. A good measure, pressed down and shaken together, and running over will be poured into your lap. So when Jesus talks about not judging, he's talking about a judgment that condemns. And Jesus wants his disciples to be the complete opposite to this. Jesus wants his disciples to be forgiving. Jesus wants his disciples to be generous. And Jesus wants his disciples to be merciful, as we saw last week in verse 36, just as the Father is merciful. And Jesus illustrates this point with a very pertinent illustration of the time, if you look in verse 38, that of the grain seller. Because a generous grain seller would take his measuring container and he'd pour grain into it until it was about 3/4 full. Then he would have pressed the grain down and he would shake it so that even more could be put in. And then he would fill it right up until it was basically running over and pour it quickly into the grateful buyer who would have created this makeshift pouch in his cloak to hold the grain until he got home. And I guess the appropriate comparison for today's time would be for those of you who are healthy, the generous server at the salad bar in the supermarket who fills your box until it's bursting. Or for those of us who are unhealthy, the generous ice cream seller at the cinema who makes sure that the tub is full to overflowing with ice cream. So full that you actually think it's going to topple over. And Jesus gives us this illustration because that's exactly how he wants our attitudes to others to be like. Full to the brim with generosity, forgiveness and mercy. But why? Well, because the measure we use, if you look at the end of verse 38, so that attitude that we show towards others will be the standard that will be applied to us by God. And the point of this is not that we should be moderate in our judging in order that God will be moderate towards us, but rather that we should completely abolish judgmental attitudes and replace them with generous and forgiving ones. So often, when we judge, we're negative and fault-finding. Very rarely do we actually fully assess and review the situation, ensuring that we look upon it with forgiveness and generosity. I know that I do it all the time at work. Something happens, and I instantly make a judgment. So someone doesn't send through an email as they promised, and I instantly assume that it's because they're forgetful and lazy. Very rarely do I actually think it might be because they're really struggling with something else. But if my attitude was more generous and forgiving, then I'm sure that that kind of response would be more forthcoming. But hold on just one second, I can sense you thinking. Is this saying that we can never express an opinion about others? That Christians should basically suspend all their critical faculties in relation to other people? Well, of course not, because that would be ludicrous as well as impossible. You see, Jesus' teaching here is not a call to never think or form opinions about others, but rather it is a call to exercise caution in our approach to others, always taking care to ensure that we're not condemning, but showing this generous measure of forgiveness. And how can we be sure of this? Well, it's the second lesson that we can take from the passage, and it is that we need to be discerning. So verses 39 and 40, we need to be discerning. Jesus makes it very clear that his disciples and we as Christians are not to lose our faculty of judgment. We are not to be judgmental, but we are to be discerning. And Jesus illustrates this with two simple analogies. So firstly, can you see in verse 39, can a blind man lead a blind man? Will they not both fall into a pit? So if we're not discerning, how else do we avoid following the blind man and falling into the pit? And secondly, verse 40, a student is not above his teacher, but everyone who is fully trained will be like his teacher. So if a student is never above his teacher, and at best only like his teacher, we need to make sure we're following the right teacher. We need to make sure that the teaching is right. We cannot devote our lives to following a teacher if he's not going to teach us anything important. So you see, discernment is key, and Jesus wanted to make sure his disciples knew it. And it is fundamentally important that we know it too. Jesus does not want us to follow any old person, fad or fashion, just because it appears interesting or different. Now Jesus wants us to weigh up different situations, to test them with prayer or with Christian friends. Jesus wants us to ensure that we make the correct judgments, so that we don't end up falling into the pit or following the wrong teacher. So much of the world around us today wants to lead us away from Jesus and his truths. There are so many different people, books, magazines, all telling us about how we should live our lives, all of which bear very little reference to the Bible. And in fact, many will actually teach the complete opposite. And there are so many different choices presented to us by others, many of which look very appealing, but will ultimately do us no good at all. And it's so difficult, isn't it? We are always having to make judgments. And I'm sure that all of us can think of a difficult decision and judgment that we've had to make maybe this morning or recently. And no doubt we'll have to make more this afternoon and for the rest of the week. So because of this, I think we need to follow the example of Solomon, a man renowned for his wisdom, and pray as he did in 1 Kings 3 verse 9, that God will give us a discerning heart, enabling us to distinguish between right and wrong. However, when discerning between right and wrong, we need to be careful to take of Jesus' third lesson and instruction that we see in verses 41 and 42. And that's not to be hypocritical. Let me just read those for us. Why do you look at the speck of sawdust in your brother's eye and pay no attention to the plank in your own eye? How can you say to your brother, let me take the speck out of your eye, when you yourself fail to see the plank in your own eye? You hypocrite. In these verses, Jesus clearly instructs us that when we look at the right and wrong in the lives of other people, we are not to be hypocritical. And there's a sense of ridiculousness and humour about these verses that Jesus wants us to spot. It's humour that would not be out of place on a TV sketch show today. Because you can see it, can't you? A sketch beginning with a doctor, his back to the camera, getting briefed about this incredibly delicate operation he needs to perform on a patient's eye to remove this minuscule object. As he gets up to make his way through to the theatre, we see him bumping into everything. And then finally, once he actually gets into the theatre, the nurse asks him if everything's okay, and as he spins round to say absolutely, he knocks the nurse to the floor with this gigantic bit of wood that's completely blocking his vision. But despite the humour, the point that Jesus is making is very serious, because this exact situation occurs so frequently in our lives. We are terrible at seeing our own faults, verse 41, those planks in our eyes. But aren't we brilliant at picking up the smallest things in other people's lives? Beginning of verse 41, those specks of dust. So we maximise the faults of others and we minimise the faults of our own. And we do it in every kind of situation, at work, at home, and even at church. And we all do it. So Jesus makes it very clear, if we are not to be hypocritical, then we must engage in self-examination before we even begin to engage in judgment or discernment. Can you see at the end of verse 42? First, take the plank out of your eye, and then you will see clearly to remove the speck from your brother's eyes. So, we have to judge ourselves before we judge others. We need to make sure that we are as critical of ourselves as we so often are of others, and as generous to others as we always are to ourselves. Have we got any planks obscuring our vision at the moment? Any planks that are preventing us from seeing those we work with or those we go to church with clearly? And dealing with these planks can be very difficult. Rarely do we like to look at and focus in on our own faults. I know that I found it very difficult a few weeks ago at work when we were discussing this chapter of a report that a colleague had written. And I was questioning some of the things that they had put in the report. And as we were discussing this, we were both maintaining that our view was right. And I was sitting there thinking, they are so arrogant. But then it suddenly struck me that I was being exactly the same. I was being just as arrogant, if not more so. And it was a tough realisation. It was hard to back down from that situation, to take a softer approach. It was very difficult to remove the plank. But only once we've removed these planks can we even begin to contemplate addressing the specks of dust in other people's eyes. Because let's face it, who on earth would want to undergo an eye operation with a blind surgeon? So this passage has so far given us three very clear lessons about what as Christian disciples we need to ensure that we do when it comes to forming opinions and making judgments about others. And whilst we can seek to change our own judgmental attitudes, often we cannot change the judgmental attitudes of those around us, those we work with and socialise with. Therefore, I think the fourth lesson that we can take from this passage is that when others continue to judge us, they need to be able to recognise us as Christians. So fourthly and finally, we need to be recognisable. Verses 43 and 44. I'll just read those. No good tree bears bad fruit, nor does a bad tree bear good fruit. Each tree is recognised by its own fruit. Therefore, when people judge us, they must recognise us as a good tree. They must see good fruit. And what does this good fruit look like? Well, let's look at verse 45. The good man brings good things out of the good stored up in his heart, and the evil man brings evil things out of the evil stored up in his heart. For, and this is the key bit, out of the overflow of his heart, his mouth speaks. You see, Jesus tells us that we speak what the heart feels. He shows us there's this indissoluble link between our life and our beliefs. And as Christians, we do know that our lives need to be different. We know that we no longer need to fear God's ultimate and final judgment, because Jesus faced it for us when he died on the cross, and that he came through it when he rose 3 days later. We should know, therefore, all about forgiveness and generosity and judgment, because we know about God's ultimate forgiveness and generosity. So if this is what we know in our heart, then it should impact on what comes out of our mouths. But I know this is incredibly tough at times. But hopefully if we're able to do this, we will be recognisable as Christians, because we won't be judgmental, but we'll look at others with forgiveness and generosity. We'll be modelling this incomparably generous and forgiving attitude that God showed to us. It's verse 36 again. Being merciful because God is merciful to us. So if you're not a Christian here today, then can I thank you so much for coming and for listening. And I hope that you did find some genuinely practical advice in the lessons we've learnt from Jesus. But please, don't think that these four things make you a Christian, because that's not it at all. You see, we can't do anything to become a Christian. We only become a Christian because of God's mercy, his forgiveness and generosity in judgment, which was shown to us through sending his only perfect son, Jesus, to face the judgment that we rightly deserve, so that we don't have to face it. So the result is, if we accept this mercy, then in response and gratitude, we'll want to live lives that are not condemning, not hypocritical, but full of discernment, and ultimately lives that model God's forgiving and generous judgment to those around us. So if you are a Christian here today, we need to ask ourselves, is that us? Are we doing that? Do our lives model God's forgiveness and mercy? I'll pray now just as we close. Lord, I thank you so much for your word. and I thank you so much that it speaks so clearly to us. I really pray now that you'll enable us to learn from what we've heard, that it will make a difference in our lives, Lord. Please strengthen us and sustain us in this. Amen.